Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, March 30th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from beautiful Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We've got a fantastic show for you today, because joining us in a moment for today's episode, Love Shouldn't Hurt, will be my guest, Catherine Tull. She's a psychotherapist specializing in the effects of trauma, family violence, and interpersonal communication. But first, I want to tell all of you, my listeners, that I'm so honored that you carved out time in your schedule to join us. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, all you need to do is punch the 1 to let me know that you have a question or a comment. If you're on the webcast, just type in your questions or comments, and I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so anything can happen, lost signals being one of the most common things that happens. So if your call is suddenly lost, just dial in again, and don't worry about missing anything, because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes. Now about me. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also the mom of 4 children, all adults now, and the grandma of 3. I recently retired after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels. The last 20 of those I spent teaching critical thinking. If you haven't already done so, I want to invite you to visit my website, www.coloryourlifehappy.com, to learn about my upcoming book by the same title, Color Your Life Happy, Uncover the Inner Joy You Deserve. It is full of stories, tips, and activities that will speak to your inner desire to get the life that you want and that you deserve. On the radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all parts of your life. Our discussions will include things like living a fulfilling life, following a spiritual path, making wise decisions, all of those things, but most of all, being good to yourself. Each week, I will interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, all of which contribute to lasting happiness. Well, let's get to the amazing show that I have for you today. Hi, Catherine. Welcome.
Hi, Flora. Good morning.
Good morning. Before I begin my interview, I want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you. Catherine Tull is a nationally sought-after speaker on issues of self-empowerment, family violence, and relationship communication. She has a thriving private clinical practice in Los Angeles. She's an associate faculty member at 2 universities, an author, a poet, and a single mother of 3. Catherine is a certified trainer for ACT Against Violence, which stands for Adults and Children Together Against Violence, a program of the American Psychological Association and the National Committee on Education of Young Children. She's utilized for her expertise on both radio and television, and she provides trainings for professionals as a certified provider of continuing education with the California State Board of Behavioral Sciences. Her professional affiliations include the American Psychological Association, California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, Institute on Violence, Abuse, and Trauma, and the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. You can learn more about Catherine and her work at her website, www.nextboldstep.com. Catherine, thank you for joining me today.
I am very happy to be here, Flora.
I am so delighted to have you, and I want to get started right away by asking you how you came to develop your program, If Love Hurts.
I'm really glad that you're asking me about that. I have been teaching domestic violence primarily to professionals and people who are involved in taking care of other people for the last 7 years. And for the last 2.5 years, I have been teaching it very specifically at the graduate school level here at a private university in Los Angeles. And many of my students, in fact, most of them, have said to me, I wish that this information were available to my friends, because I will have an average of 25 students in a graduate class. Of them, usually 3 out of every 4 women in the class has had some experience with relationship abuse, whether it was in her childhood or in her adult life. And that's higher than the national statistic, but at any rate, they always say to me, I have a friend, my sister, my mother, my aunt, my neighbor, every person in the class knows somebody that's in an abusive mm-hmm. relationship, even if they are not. And they say to me, I wish I could make this information available to them. How can I do that? So I finally decided that I would do it, and I am now running a 6-week teleclass that I'm calling If Love Hurts. And mm-hmm. the purpose of the class is to make the information on what abuse looks like available to women all around the country and in all English-speaking countries, truthfully, because mm-hmm. most of us don't know when bad behavior is actually the precursor to an abusive relationship. We don't mm-hmm. know that little things like sarcasm can be leading down the road to what develops into an abusive relationship. We don't know that things like jealousy and possessiveness could be red flags that we really want to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Because most of us, as women, really want to be in love. Many of us are still living with that fantasy that Prince Charming is going to ride up on his white horse and sweep us away into a life of beauty and bliss that will never have any cares to it. And
wait a minute, you mean that's not going to happen?
I know.
Oh no.
Well,
you've disillusioned me.
I actually think that kind of love does exist, Flora, but I think that we have to be very discerning as we're on the road to choose it.
Oh, okay.
And that's where the catch comes in, is in learning. It's in learning that process of discernment.
Okay. I want to have you back up a little bit and repeat the statistic that you mentioned earlier about the percentage of the facts about domestic violence.
I'd be happy to. According to the American Psychological Association, in every 4 women will experience abuse at the hands of her intimate partner during her adult lifetime.
Wow. How do they define abuse in that situation?
Abuse is defined as emotional, psychological, verbal, and physical abuse in that particular definition.
Okay.
Now, as I teach about domestic violence and relationship abuse, I actually teach even more subtle categories, because when someone is exercising control over your life, they can do that in many very, very subtle ways that we would not necessarily define as abuse on the surface. But when you add several things together, it paints a picture that then becomes very clear that you are being abused in this relationship.
It seems like the subtle kind is going to be the hardest kind to recognize and for people to admit is going on.
That's exactly right. And that is why I developed the class, If Love Hurts, so that I can teach women what those subtle forms of abuse are, so that they can learn to be aware of those. And not to imply that you walk out the door if you see one of these behaviors, because many of these behaviors are actually quite negotiable, and many of them are actually able to be transformed with good communication. Some of them can't be. And that's why it's very important to be able to know what you're looking at and then have information so that you can make safe and healthy choices for yourself. The American Bar Association, which of course is the professional association of all the attorneys in the country, actually believes that that number is even higher.
Whoa.
They actually believe that that number is one in every three women.
Oh my goodness.
And when I travel, in my travels, whether I'm teaching or speaking or even attending a conference, every single place I go, that statistic is born true. I was just at a conference in Las Vegas. I was sharing about that with you earlier before the show started. This past week, I spent almost the whole week in Las Vegas at a conference for entrepreneurs. And I had the opportunity to be in a small group activity where there were less than 15 people, most of whom were women. In that group, four of those women had, in fact, been in abusive relationships. One of them was still trying to get out.
My goodness.
So there's that number.
Yes.
And here
yes.
I was at a business conference, and there's that number.
Wow. Well, you know, I was surprised. I guess I was very naive when I was a younger teacher and thought that violence, physical violence, pretty much took place among married couples.
Mm-hmm.
And until one of my students came to school one day, I was teaching at a community college. She must have been maybe 18, and she had a cast on her arm. And, of course, you know, being the concerned teacher, I said, oh, my gosh. I said, what happened? You look like you're in pain, and, you know, I kind of joked with her. And she hesitated to tell me the truth, but her boyfriend had knocked her down and beat her up. And he was picking her up after school that day. I thought, oh, my gosh.
Right.
So I realized then that this is something that happens to very young women in relationships, not just to married couples.
That's right.
And I was appalled to learn that.
In February, I was teaching my domestic violence class at the graduate school. And on the second day of the class, all of my students went home, and it's very, very draining. We teach this in an eight-hour format on two consecutive days or separated by a week. And you can imagine how draining it is to talk about this and learn about it and think about it for eight straight hours on a day. On the second day of my class, my students went home. They were all emotionally drained and kind of spent after thinking about this for 16 hours. And that night, the news broke about Chris Brown and Rihanna. And that has had so much play in the media for the last couple of months. Now, in the last couple of weeks, we're not hearing so much about it. But it was an absolutely perfect demonstration. I'm sad to say, but it was a perfect demonstration of what I try to convey to women, is that just as you expressed you were naive, you thought it only happened between married couples, a lot of people think that domestic violence only happens in homes of, let's say, lower socioeconomic families that perhaps have not had the opportunities of education or financial success. And many, many people, most people still have a stereotype about what the typical battered woman looks like. And yet there came your 18-year-old student, a young woman on her road to empowerment, on her road to pursuing her education, in your classroom. So she said did not fit the stereotype. And then fast forward to February of 2009, and here comes Rihanna, and a spectacularly beautiful and talented young woman with the world at her feet, getting beat up in one of the most affluent neighborhoods in the world by an equally talented young man who's had every possible opportunity to make his life a shining example of success to young men around the world. and here's the relationship model that those two young people are putting out there.
Wow.
And I had four or five of my students write their final papers on that exact topic.
Wow.
The fact that here are these two celebrities whose faces are plastered all over the world, and this is what went on in their relationship.
Exactly. Exactly.
It demonstrates that domestic violence knows no class, no race, no location, no religion. It impacts couples all over the world in every possible category that you can imagine, including same-sex couples.
And do you know, when I think about the fact that a story has made it to the news like that, that makes me think that it's been going on quite a while before it escalated to the point of making it to the news.
Exactly.
So it's not a new thing. In other words, it's not the first time, probably, that they had some kind of violence going on. So that, too, is a scary thought. By the time we hear about it, it's common, or it's happened before.
That's right. It's something, that level of volatility in their emotional communication is something that they have both normalized in their relationship.
Yes.
And
yes.
They've already gotten back together again.
Oh, my goodness.
You know,
that's one of the reasons that I bet policemen hate to answer domestic violence calls, because so many times they aren't able to prosecute because the couples get back together, the woman doesn't want to press charges, and it's got to be a very frustrating kind of thing to try to help someone in that situation.
It is it's a terrible catch-22, Flora, because police don't like to go out on domestic dispute calls. They can be the most dangerous kind of call a policeman can go out on.
Yes.
And yet, at the same time, police also can be a part of the problem.
Yes.
Because there are hundreds of thousands of women in particular who have had very demeaning interactions with police when they have finally had the courage to call the police.
Yes.
The police show up and may say something like, "So what did you do to piss him off this time?"
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
And
okay.
This is very, very common.
Yeah, and I would hesitate to call someone if I thought I was going to hear that, too.
Exactly. And then, of course, word of that spreads. If
sure.
If you have a couple of women or a group of women who know each other and trust each other, and they are sharing their personal stories, which as women we love to do, and that's where we get our support from, is in talking to our girlfriends and our family.
Mm-hmm,
and they're
sure.
sharing their stories, and then one woman says to the other, "Well, I finally called the police, and guess what happened when they showed up?"
Mm.
Then the women hearing that story, then they're not going to call the police.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it gets loaded and frustrating on both sides. The police are nervous to go out on these calls because the danger of them being in the line of fire is very,
yes.
very high. The women don't want to call because they may get additionally mistreated at the hands of the police. In fact, I have a private client who's in this situation right now that's
mm-hmm.
living through these exact circumstances. And then, of course, there's the piece that you mentioned, which is that sadly, many, many victims will leave multiple times. The average battered woman will leave upwards of 7 times before she finally leaves for good.
Okay. Wow.
And there are many, many reasons for that. There are lots of reasons. I'll be talking about that during my teleclass. We don't have enough time to talk about all those reasons now. But what I would like to share with your listeners is that all of those reasons are actually legitimate reasons for staying.
Sure.
Nobody
sure.
stays because they're stupid.
No.
And nobody
no,
stays,
I'm sure.
Yeah, nobody stays because they're stupid, and nobody stays because they like it. And those
right, okay.
are two great misconceptions that people believe in all the time, is that,
yes.
well, a woman stays because she's weak, or a woman stays because she actually likes it, or a woman stays because she's just too stupid to know any better. That's never the case. Never.
Never.
Women stay for all kinds of very powerful reasons. And I mean, I'm sure that everybody listening to the show, including both you and I, have broken up with somebody somewhere along the road.
Sure.
Right? Whether it happened when you were young or in your, you know, recent adult life, breaking up a relationship is very hard to do.
Yes, it is.
Leaving somebody that you have emotionally invested yourself in and emotionally allowed yourself to be vulnerable with is a very difficult thing to do.
Sure, sure.
And that's without violence being present.
Without the violence. It feels like failure. It feels like you haven't tried hard enough. And if, even if you're the one who initiates it, it's still hard to do.
Exactly. And then add in the component of being afraid of what's going to happen if you leave.
Exactly. That's very scary.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you a question because this just came up from one of the listeners. Is domestic violence towards men as well documented as it is, you know, women harming men as men harming women?
Yes, there is domestic violence that gets perpetrated against men. There's no question about it. The statistics, however, demonstrate that it's far more frequent. It's more than 3-1 that the cases of documented domestic violence are that a man is perpetrating violence against a woman. Now, we don't know what the rate of reporting is on either side. Just talking about people not wanting to call the police, the way those statistics are gathered are through police reports, medical reports, emergency rooms. Most people are very, very ashamed and afraid when they are in an abusive relationship. Most people don't talk about it. Very, very often, they never seek help. And the truth is that emergency rooms around the country treat more women for domestic violence injuries than for rapes, muggings, and automobile accidents combined.
Wow. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you talk about reporting, I can just imagine that men would be even less likely to report something as domestic violence than women.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure the reporting is a problem in terms of the actual number of times this happens.
I'm sure that that's true. And there is a great deal of domestic violence in same-sex relationships, both in male and female same-sex relationships. And consider how stigmatized those relationships already are in our society.
Yes.
And how those relationships might be handled by the police.
Oh, my goodness.
And how likely are people in same-sex relationships going to be to pick up the phone?
Exactly.
When they know that simply being who they are judged and condemned constantly.
Wow, that is, there are a lot of things to think about here.
It is. It's a lot to think about. So statistics, of course, are only as good as the sources where we're getting the information, and that's all we have to go on.
Wow.
But I can tell you that in my own experience, as I was sharing, everywhere I go, the numbers bear the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't interact with as many men as I do women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the numbers bear out in groups of men because I don't work in exclusive groups of men where I can actually say to men, how many of you have been abused in a relationship?
Yeah.
It also depends on how you're defining abuse. And one of the points that's very important to remember is getting into one argument a year doesn't mean that you're in an abusive relationship. Every relationship.
What kind of relationship has that?
Every relationship has some conflict.
Sure.
Right? No two people are
ever. Conflict is not abuse, is what you're saying.
No, exactly. Relationship conflict doesn't mean that it's abuse. It's what it looks like. It's what it looks like and what it makes the other person feel like.
Yes.
Abuse is a pattern of control over another person.
Wow.
And when someone uses their words, their tone of voice, their behavior to intimidate and instill fear and manipulate their partner, that's an abusive relationship.
Yes, wow. And I want to... I'm sorry. I know you have a powerful personal story, so I definitely want to take time to ask you to share that. Before you do, though, I want to remind any callers who are on the line and want to speak or ask a question to be sure to punch the number 1 on your telephone, and then I will see that you want to speak. Then those of you who are on the web chat, just go ahead and type in your questions, and I'll see them and share them with Catherine. Okay, Catherine, would you share your personal story? Because I've heard a bit of it. I know it's powerful.
Sure. First of all, I am in my early 50s, and I have been married twice. And I married my second husband at, I think I was 31 when we married, and we had dated for 4 years. So I had had a chance to see him in many, many, many situations and to get to know him quite well before we got married.
Okay.
As our relationship progressed, he became more and more emotionally and verbally and psychologically abusive. And after our second child was born, he actually began being physically abusive with me.
Hmm.
Now, the truth is that he had been physically abusive with my son from my first marriage from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it was abuse. I grew up in an era where corporal punishment, physical punishment of children, was considered acceptable.
Exactly. So did I. And so did a lot of us.
Right. We grew up in an era when whooping your kids and using things to hit your kids was not the exception, it was the norm.
It was the norm.
Most people that I know that are over the age of 30 have been hit with something in addition to their parents' hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether it was a belt or a switch or an extension cord
or a hairbrush.
I've had many people share stories of being whipped with extension cords with me.
Oh, yes.
And this all happens in childhood. And this is where we learn what relationships look like and what acceptable behavior is.
Mm-hmm.
So as a child, if you learn that hollering and screaming when people are angry is normal, you think that that's what relationship negotiation looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you learn that hitting somebody is an appropriate expression of disagreement, that's what you think is normal.
Of course. That's what you see.
Uh-huh. And you carry those standards into your adult life.
Mm.
And so when those behaviors are enacted in your adult relationships, you don't think there's anything abnormal about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You don't consider that it's abusive.
Right.
And so you go along in your daily life, and these kinds of things are happening, the yelling, the screaming, the name-calling, the belittling in front of other people, the hitting of the kids. These kinds of things were going on in my relationship, and I didn't think they were abnormal.
Wow.
And after our second child was born... Now, mind you, before we got married, my second husband told me that he definitely wanted to be a father. He told me he loved my son, and he came from a very, very large extended family himself. I had seen him with his nieces and nephews, and he was great with the kids, and he loved the kids, and he was harsh, and he was stern, but I didn't know him to be mean with his nieces and nephews. When I was pregnant with our daughter, our first child, he was very cruel to me. verbally and emotionally. And after our second child was born, then the physical violence began. And it followed the patterns that I have since come to know are the typical patterns, which is that violence in a relationship, unless it is addressed with the appropriate kinds of therapy and the appropriate kinds of behavior management skills, unless it's addressed, it will get worse. It will only go from bad to worse.
It only goes worse, yes.
It only goes from bad to worse. It doesn't go from bad to better
without
the right kind of help.
Okay.
So it went from bad to worse. And I was with my second husband for a total of 17 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I left many times, many times, and went back. And I never called the police because I had no idea what I would do to take care of our family if he ended up in jail.
Right.
And my oldest child used to just go out of his mind in rage and terror watching me being beat up. And he wanted to go after his stepfather, and I would physically hold him back and say, don't do anything, because if he goes to jail, how are we going to eat?
Wow. And that's a real concern.
Absolutely.
For many women.
Absolutely.
Like you said, there are a lot of reasons.
I was a mom with three kids. How was I going to support them?
Exactly. That's a consideration.
That's a lot of women say, because they are financially dependent upon the man. And we live in a society where men are still earning three times as much as women for the same work.
Wow.
So a woman and a man can both be doing the same amount of work for a company, and in most cases, the man's still being paid more to do it.
Yes. You know what? Another thing that concerned me when you were talking about the progression in your relationship was, how were your in-laws and your parents reacting to what was going on?
They were turning their backs.
Okay.
There was an incident when my parents were over at our home for dinner, and an incident occurred where my ex-husband grabbed my son away from the dinner table, dragged him into our bedroom, and started slapping him and screaming at him. I got up and ran into the other room, and I inserted my body between the two of them, and I was yelling, "Stop it, stop it. If you're going to hit somebody, hit me, hit me." And he did. And my parents got up and left. They
You mean left the house?
Left the house. They didn't call the police. They didn't call anybody.
They didn't try to intercede?
No.
They just felt like it was your business and you should deal with it?
The next day, I called my father. Now, mind you, my mother had already become disabled from a massive stroke. And my father was taking really good care of her. And so the next day, and I was deeply embarrassed and deeply ashamed that had happened, that it had happened in front of other people, that the secret was out of the bag. Called my father to, I apologized for creating there being a scene while they were at the house.
Even though you hadn't created the scene.
That's right. And then I said, "But Daddy, I have to ask you something. Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you try to help?" And he said, "It's none of my business. It's your life." So he turned his back, took my mother, and left the house. So I knew I couldn't go home.
No.
He had turned his back on me and turned his back on his grandson and turned his back on the problem.
Yes.
And he told me it was none of his business, that it was my problem. I had to solve it. That let me know I had nowhere to go and no one to ask for help from.
Yeah.
And that was a very isolating feeling.
Which is why we need you and women support groups. Exactly.
Absolutely.
One of the listeners just typed that this shows you why they're so critically needed. And worldwide, we critically need it, because many times we don't have any place to go. Or when you were talking about corporal punishment, I remember when I was a young mom that my mother chastised me for not spanking my children.
Right.
Because to her, I was spoiling them, and I wasn't. They were going to turn out to be horrible axe murderers or something if I didn't spank them.
That's
and
right.
Discipline them in the way that she thought was appropriate.
And I'm sure that the way that she thought was appropriate is something that none of us would allow now.
Exactly.
But in that generation, that was what was considered not only normal, but necessary.
Necessary. And, you know, why people didn't see that it was not a good deterrent for a lot of children. I mean, it did deter some of us because I just didn't think I enjoyed being spanked.
Right.
But it certainly didn't create the kind of relationship you wanted with your parent.
That's right. Every student that I've had, and I've had many that have said, hey, I was whooped, and I'm just fine. Look at me. I'm a graduate student now. I'm building a fabulous career. What's
wrong with that? Right,
right. And
yeah.
I simply say, so let me ask you a question. And Flora, I will ask you this question. How did you feel when you were being hit? Did you feel loved?
No. But you mean when I was a child being spanked?
Yeah.
I definitely didn't feel loved, and I felt wronged because many times the spankings were for things that were sometimes even omissions or things that were not severe enough to warrant a spanking, in my view.
Right.
And my mother was also from that school of thought that of being an equal opportunity disciplinarian. So I had two younger sisters. So sometimes all three of us would get a spanking for some incident.
Right.
So no, it did not make me feel loved at all.
Right.
And again, like you were saying, it made me feel alone in many respects because who are you going to complain to?
Right.
Where are you going to go? When I was a child, we got spanked at school. And
right.
by the time we got home, if we told our parents that we had gotten a spanking from the teacher, we got another spanking at home for having annoyed the teacher.
Exactly.
To cause her to spank us. So,
right. And did anybody ever actually say to you, honey, what really happened?
I don't remember
right.
that anyone did that. No.
Right. It was always about the adults, and it was always about being blamed.
Yes.
And when you get spanked, when you're a child and you get spanked by an adult, I don't know about you, but I learned to be afraid.
Yes.
And to this day, sometimes I shiver in my shoes a little bit when I'm confronted with a very strong authority figure.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I learned to be afraid.
Yes.
Now, what's so interesting about this is that I learned early on to be afraid of my ex-husband's anger as well, even before I married him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Long after I left him, long after, and after I had done quite a bit of therapy already, I
mm-hmm.
finally had the strength to look way back to see
mm-hmm.
if I had seen early warning signs.
Yes.
And in fact, all the early warning signs were there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know they were warning signs, I overlooked them. I
mm-hmm.
wanted his love more than I was willing
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
admit how much fear I was feeling. But the truth is, I was afraid of him, and I was afraid of his anger from the beginning.
From the beginning, okay.
But because being afraid of anger was so familiar to me,
mm-hmm.
it didn't seem unusual. It didn't seem abnormal.
Yes.
So
that's the scary part. It
exactly.
feels normal. Oh, my goodness. I want to take a call from one of our listeners who has a question. So let me open the lines for caller number two just a moment. Hi there, caller number two. What's your name? Where are you from? And what's your question? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Would you give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question?
Oh, Melvina from Chicago.
Hi, Melvina.
Hi, Melvina.
Hi. I just wanted to know about more of the subtle signs.
Okay.
That you were talking about earlier.
Okay. So some of the subtle signs that we can look for are things like controlling all the money in a relationship, where you don't have relaxed access to the money in the relationship.
Okay.
That can be very, very, very subtle.
Well, mine's kind of reversed. See, I make more.
Uh-huh.
But can it be a subtle way of not providing?
So
would there be a form of it?
Not providing financially?
Yes.
So, in other words, kind of intentionally not doing something?
Yes, it seems that way. It's been for like over a year and a half.
And so how does it make you feel that support's not being provided? How does that make you feel?
Oh, terrible. I've accumulated extra bills because of the results and had, well, two garnishments because of this, because I try to stretch my finances.
Right. So it has forced you into a position that you would not have chosen for yourself.
Definitely.
Right. So, yes, I mean, that could be, and it could be unconscious on your partner's part, but that could, in fact, be a way of controlling you and controlling the relationship.
Because I've had several discussions, and they always end with an excuse or an argument.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it could very well be an unconscious way to control the relationship. And
Okay. Some
of the other subtle things that you might look at are how you're being talked to, the kinds of things that are being said, and the way they're being said. That can be very, very subtle. Verbal abuse can be very, very subtle.
Oh, that's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's there.
Mm-hmm.
Sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
Stern, just authoritative talk down.
Mm-hmm.
The tone is always mostly cold.
Mm-hmm. Cold and condescending.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely, probably like once a week, it's not, but then always comes back during the, it's off and on, but mostly it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sounds like that's not a very happy spot for you.
No, but it's not.
For sure.
No. Never planned that.
We never
do. We never plan it.
We never
do. I'm wondering if, Catherine, if you can talk about how difficult it was for you to leave your abusive husband, which may help the caller and others that are on the line. You know, what stages of thinking did you go through over time before you finally left him?
Well, in my case, Flora and Melvin, I hope this helps you, and I also would like very much to give you a couple of immediate suggestions. And let me do that first, because I just can feel how heavy this is for you, Melvin. Are you still with us on the line?
Yes.
Yeah, I can feel how heavy this is for you. And it can be very difficult to have someone actually tell you, yes, there is a name for what you're going through, and there is a name for how it makes you feel. And sometimes that can provoke a great deal of sadness and anger when we actually hear that our instincts are accurate, because what we prefer to do is deny it. Because most of us, particularly women, we really want to believe in the person we choose to love. We really want to believe that that person is a good person and that we fell in love with them for all the right reasons. And we work really hard with our own mind to keep convincing ourselves that, yes, we did indeed make the right choice. So we overlook a lot of things. Pardon me. Oh, I'm sorry. We overlook a lot of things, and we stay in denial about a lot of things in order to survive. Because when we begin to admit to ourselves how bad it actually feels, it feels very hard to go on surviving in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
So the suggestions that I'd like to make to you, Melvina, right away are, number one, start talking to people that you love and trust. And just let them know, just find an outlet for your own feelings with someone that you trust that is not going to take those feelings back to the person in your relationship.
I've done that, yes.
Okay, so that's one thing is creating a community of support for yourself is very, very important. It's important on another level, too. It's important because maybe you're going to need to take a break for a night or a weekend at some point. I mean, you and I could have a very long conversation about what are you doing to take care of yourself and get your own needs met within the relationship. But sometimes just taking a time out for a day or a few days can be very, very helpful in terms to get your own strength back.
Yes, I've been planning like a weekend getaway, but it has to be justified because I get those questions.
I understand.
Lots of questions, like it's just suspecting anything negative of anything I do.
Yeah,
there must be a reason, and you're probably doing this or doing that. That's why you want to, you know.
Right, and it sounds like it would be really helpful if you and I could talk more at length. The other thing would be to actually seek out in your area a domestic violence support group. They meet in very well concealed locations so that you're not at danger. They are free generally. They're almost always free. You don't have to agree to any particular package of services, and you can go and you can find help and suggestions there and strength by listening to other women who are in similar circumstances.
Okay.
And I can, before the show started, I made sure to have the number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline right here in front of me. You can call them and ask them for domestic violence services in the Chicago area specifically.
I have the number.
You have the National Domestic Violence Hotline number?
Yes.
Great. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to say it out loud for all the other listeners. It is 1-800-799-SAFE. That is 1-800-799-7233. That's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. They can give you the resources in any geographic area in the continental United States.
Okay.
And be very, very helpful. And getting support for yourself, Melvina, while you're deciding how you want to handle this is very, very important.
Wow.
The other thing that I would love to suggest naturally is that you consider being on my class so that you can get a lot more information. There are a lot of wonderful books that are written, but everything that I'm hearing you say tells me that, yes, in fact, you are in a relationship that is not going in a positive direction, and it would be really, really helpful for you to take some proactive steps and believe in yourself enough, believe in the fact that you don't deserve to be treated badly.
That's right. And I want to congratulate you for calling in, because stepping forward and admitting what's going on is really tough.
Yes, it is.
So to me, you've already been proactive.
Absolutely.
Huh?
I say yes, it is, because anytime I even mention it to like some friends, I feel like I'm burdening them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be talking about.
Well,
especially if you don't feel that they're supportive, I would think.
Well, supportive and non-supportive, just in general, mm-hmm. just talking about it, even thinking about it,
how would it
makes me uncomfortable.
How would it be to admit to them that you feel ashamed, that you even have to talk about it?
I guess it's just a shame and disbelief. Just how could this be?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I waste a lot of time.
Catherine, would you tell us about your program right now? This is a good time to tell everyone how your program is going to help people, women in particular, and what they're going to learn in the class.
Absolutely. We are going to cover all of the various forms of abuse in the class, and we're going to do it in a very concrete way, so that just like Melvina was able to say, is this abuse? Is this behavior abuse? We're
mm-hmm.
going to cover all the various forms of abuse, from the most blatant to the most subtle. On every class, I'm going to open up the lines So I'm going to do about 50 to 60 minutes of actual instruction, and then I'm going to open the lines up for 40 to 45 minutes and let all the people in the class ask me questions directly, just like Melvina's been able to ask me directly, so that everybody in the class is able to learn from each other as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
what's happening to one person is very likely happening to another person. So
we're
going to have direct education. We're going to talk about ways that you can take care of yourself, ways that you can begin to support yourself, what you have to consider if you actually want to think about leaving that relationship, and things that you can do while you're in the relationship to try to see if you can, in fact, transform the relationship by transforming communication patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And then
now, how do people sign up? I'm sorry. Be sure to tell us how to sign up for that class.
Absolutely. You can go to www.nextboldstep.com/teleclass, T-E-L-E class, .html. And if you go to that page, you can just give me your name and your email. I have a free preview class tomorrow night at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time. So if you go to nextboldstep.com/teleclass, you can just put in your name and your email, and you will get the call-in information for the free call. Or you can just go to nextboldstep.com and click on the link that says If Love Hurts, and it will take you directly to the enrollment page for the class. And there's a lot more information on that page, including the bonuses that you will get when you take the class. And for everybody that calls in tomorrow night that registers for my free preview call, and I will extend this to your listeners as well, Flora.
Okay.
I'm extending a Bring Your Best Friend for Free bonus discount.
Okay.
So for everybody that signs up to take the free teleclass tomorrow night, you can enroll two people for the price of one for the six-week teleclass.
Okay. Now, how do they get to the free teleclass? Is that the free teleseminar tomorrow night? It's on your website?
Uh-huh. They go to nextboldstep.com / teleclass.html.
Okay. And so the free teleseminar is like a preview of what's coming up.
Tomorrow night at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time. And it will be a call-in very similar to this.
Wow. What was I going to ask you? Oh, you were going to tell us a little bit. We have about 8 minutes left. So could you take just a couple minutes and talk about the steps or process of your leading, your relationship?
Well, I will tell you that I think I mentioned earlier that I actually did leave many times before
mm-hmm.
I finally left for good. And I did not leave for good until he literally tried to take my life.
Wow.
And I, because I was so isolated, I had no support system where I lived. I did not know that I was a battered woman. There was actually a superb battered woman shelter less than 2 miles from my house, and I even had a friend who served on the fundraising committee for it, but I didn't know that I was a battered woman. It never occurred to me to go get help there.
Mm.
So the violence became more and more significant, as happens in abusive relationships. The abuse will get worse. Generally, relationships that are verbally abusive, if they're not transformed, will very likely escalate into physical abuse if they're
mm-hmm.
not transformed. That's exactly what happened in my relationship. It's what happens in most relationships. And then the physical abuse begins to get worse and worse and worse. And it wasn't until it almost cost me my life that I finally left. And I also want to admit to you that all of my children have been deeply traumatized by the experiences of their childhood.
Mm.
And so it not only it not only affects the person, but it affects other people in their lives.
Yes, yes, it does. Yes. And speaking of other people, could I ask you a question about being the family member of someone who's being abused? You can see it, they can't. You want to encourage them to get help. How do you go about supporting them and getting help when they haven't quite seen it yet themselves?
That's a great question, Flora, and I'm glad you asked it. First of all, always tell them that you love them and you
mm-hmm.
believe in them and that
mm-hmm.
you see how strong they are and that you know that they deserve to be treated with respect and
okay.
that you will be there to support them.
Okay.
It's very, very difficult to force anybody to change. It's impossible
sure.
to force anybody
it's
to change.
It's impossible, yeah.
But if you say to somebody, I believe in you, I know how a loving relationship can feel and what you deserve, and I want to support you to figure out what you want because
wow.
I believe that you deserve to be treated with respect. I believe that you deserve that, and I see how strong you are. And I will do whatever it takes to support you to really be able to choose your best life.
Yes, yes.
And I believe in your ability to make the best choices for yourself.
Wow. Oh, we have 4 minutes left. We're near the end of today's show. Oh, my gosh. I want to urge all of you who have been enlightened, encouraged, empowered by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family and friends, particularly the 1-800-799-SAFE number.
Yes.
And if you want to listen to this show again, you can go on. It's been recorded. You can just come back to blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, and you will see under on-demand episodes, all the previous episodes. You can listen to it online. You can download it. It's there for you, and it's one of those kinds of things you may well want to listen to or have someone else listen to. I want to thank you so much, Catherine, for coming on today. It's a very timely topic. Obviously, you can see how we reacted to it. And I want to thank my listeners, too, for tuning in. I'm inviting all of you to join me again next Monday, April 6th at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when my guest will be Dr. Stephen Heyman. He's a psychotherapist and author of Stress, Climbing Out of Its Pits with God. His episode, Overcoming the Storm, will be an eye-opener and an inspiration. Again, Catherine, you still there?
I'm right here.
I just want to say thank you so very much, and I'm urging everyone, please go over to nextboldstep.com, www.nextboldstep.com. Did you want to leave us with any parting words, Catherine?
I want all the listeners to really know that we all deserve to be treated with respect, and we should never settle for less. And love does not look like disrespectful treatment. And so whenever we're in a relationship where we are being treated with less than respect, it's time to maybe start taking a look at what am I allowing for myself and what kind of choices do I really want to make.
Wow, thank you so much. Have a blessed week, and remember to color your life happy.
Thank you.
Flora. Goodbye, everyone. You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you.
Each day you wake up and get out of bed, you got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you want to be. Hard day to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and and triumph is a little oomph. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're going to step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.